Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, AFR. Appreciate you listening. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. How you doing, Fred?
Great to be here.
And we appreciate you listening. You can watch the show if you want to on our Facebook page or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show live there as we video stream from our studios. Check that out. You can send us an email if you'd like to at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. All right, fellas. Before we jump into the news of the day, did any of you get to see the basketball? Did you watch the NCAA Final Four?
Did not.
I didn't either.
There's no point in me talking about it then. Okay, if neither, neither one of you hockey junkies cared to watch
The problem. Okay. The problem.
Well, there's no point in me spending 5 minutes describing to you what happened if you didn't see it. And it was.
I did. Are you talking about the end of the Virginia game?
The Virginia Auburn game.
I watched the replay of it. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's the most amazing. I hate to bring it up for Auburn fans because it's gut wrenching. Stay in your bed for 3 days, painful.
Yes.
The way they lost that ball game.
It didn't look like a foul to me. I'll just say that.
But Virginia, you know, on the other hand, this kid, Virginia wins in the most remarkable way against Auburn. Texas Tech's in the thing, too, you know.
Right.
They play tonight against Virginia for the national championship. But then this guy gets up there, talking about the drama of college sports, particularly this kid gets up there for University of Virginia with the whole dome in Minneapolis and millions of people watching on television.
Three free throws, right?
And he hits three in a row.
Yeah.
To win the game for
he got fouled on a 3-point shot.
Yes, but you know the old what's the old adage? He has ice in his veins.
Yeah,
that perfectly described this kid. I was thinking he's probably 21 years old, and this is the world's watching, and he sinks three and free throws in a row to win the game. Anyway, it's just it's one of those things where nobody should have lost that ball game, probably.
Right.
But it was a great. Great ball game, but they play tonight. The University of Virginia and Texas Tech University play in the national championship game.
See, I have an elders meeting tonight, and it's usually about four and a half hours long. And I knew I'm not going to be able to watch the national championship game, so I thought, why watch the other?
That stands to reason, Ed. Yeah. I can understand that, why you would.
And the NHL playoffs start on Wednesday.
Right.
So
a four and a half hour elder meeting.
Yes.
Well, they're elders.
You can't get out of that?
No, I'm an elder, and I'm the secretary, so I have to
but
take minutes.
You got to take every note.
We do eat. We do eat. So you take about 20 minutes out of that for eating. So,
well, maybe
I'm
I
not
should,
complaining.
I know, but
it's a great
maybe
group
I should
of guys.
Come. I don't know if you got a 4.5 hour meeting.
It's only once a month.
You got too much to talk about. You probably need to trim your agenda list down there.
I will talk to them about that.
I don't. You know. Anyway. That's just one man's opinion.
Yes.
Ed mentioned hockey.
Yeah.
I did.
Starts Wednesday night, NHL playoffs.
Oh, playoffs.
We're into it. Okay. And Ed's Boston Bruins are playing the
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're going to hear a lot about that.
Two original six teams.
Yes. Thank God for that.
And they have played, I think, the last 2 years in the playoffs. Anyway, they have some. The Bruins went 7 games against the Maple Leafs last year in the opening round. And were trailing by 3 goals and came back and scored 4 unanswered goals in the third period and won it.
That was rigged. You know that.
Yeah. Huh?
That kind of like that wrestling.
That was fake.
Yeah.
It was fake news, fake hockey.
So anyway, folks, for the majority of our listeners who don't care about hockey, just prepare to persevere a little bit because Fred and I will mention it.
There will be hockey banter.
Yes,
you're on today's issues.
But you know, hockey is
it's a metaphor for life.
It
really is.
It's becoming more popular here in the South,
and that's the only reason why I watch it, Tim. Why? Is for the metaphor.
The metaphor for life?
For the spiritual applications.
Right, right. We all need a good goalie in our lives, don't we?
That's why I'm going to go see the Avengers Endgame movie when it comes out at the end of the month, is because of the spiritual applications.
Application, yeah. Right.
Right.
All right, Fred. Tell us the good news that's happening in the world today.
Well, on the elder agenda tonight, thou shalt not lie.
You didn't lie about the time.
I didn't lie, did I?
Four and a half hours.
Absolutely not. Well, good the big night. News this morning out of Washington, D.C., actually it broke last night. The president, now this is the way it's being worded, the president has accepted the resignation of his Homeland Security Secretary, Kirstjen Nielsen. Now, I say that because I think most people believe he asked her to resign. They were together last Friday. They went out to one of the border locations looking at some of the new extensions of the border out there, and everything seemed to be all right. And then she was invited to the White House last night. You know, if you're a member of President Trump's staff, you know, and you're invited over to the White House, that's probably a cue right there that this is not going to end well.
Right.
When Donald Trump asked you over for the evening. And so anyway, she's done. She said in her resignation letter that she typed out last evening, "I've determined that it's the right time for me to step aside. I hope that the next secretary will have the support of Congress and the courts in fixing the laws which have impeded our ability to fully secure America's borders and which have contributed to discord in our nation's discourse." And I, you know, she's right there. She's had to battle Congress, members of the Democratic Party who still insist there is no crisis on our southern border. And she's had to battle the courts who keep, you know, if somebody comes up and says, I have a rough life in Guatemala, therefore I want you to accept me as a refugee. Take me in. Pretty well by law now, they have to accept them and take them in.
But why is President Trump upset with her?
Well, he thinks that we are to the point. He also said on the weekend, and this is to respond to your question, Tim, is that we can't take any more. We are saturated. We cannot deal with this. And apparently he believes the person that he announced last night to take over from Kirstjen Nielsen, at least on a temporary basis, is U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Kevin McAleenan. And he believes that this gentleman, McAleenan, has the ability to come up with a solution. He is well-respected on both sides of the aisle in Congress. He knows what's going on at the border. The president believes that this man will be able to take it a step beyond Kirstjen Nielsen in resolving what's going on at the border.
Yeah, I think that President Trump was frustrated mm-hmm. with the border situation. You know, sometimes it's kind of like when a baseball team is in a terrible ongoing slump and you need to shake things up and you fire the manager and you go, well, it's not really his fault, but we got to do something. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that's what this is. The President Trump's very frustrated with the situation on the border and he wants someone maybe that brings a fresh approach, maybe a tougher approach to try to get some solutions going, because this is a huge, hugely important issue for his reelection.
He's got to get some
movement on this, or he may lose support from his base. That's my guess. I'm not privy to the inside machinations of the White House, but
Well, I don't know what to think about this, because you know, when the administration did get tougher, then they got hit with you're separating children from parents.
Right.
Remember that?
Right.
And then they backed down off that and went back to catch and release, right?
Yeah, to me, there is no – I'm not sure there is a solution to this problem unless you get both political parties together. And right now, the Democrats have no motivation to make this easier for President Trump. And they're willing to, I've said this last week, they're willing to let him twist in the wind. But there's no solution. You've got to change catch and release. You got to change, you know, who gets asylum. You got to build a wall. You've got to go after people, companies who hire illegal immigrants. You've got to get tough on who gets, you know, welfare in this country. But, you got all that's got to change for this to stop, and you can't do that with both political parties.
I was reading an article over the weekend too, not to add despair to despair on that issue, but that we've lost control. We, the United States federal government, has lost control of people who overstay their visas.
Right.
Yep.
So there's, you know, that's not enforceable any longer. So we do have a major mess with our immigration policy, and you're right. It would really take both parties to solve it, to put some teeth into.
Well, here's a suggestion.
Yeah.
For the visa thing, but this goes to the point that both parties have to be in agreement on this.
Yeah.
You come into this. You want to come into this country. You want access to hospitals and schools. And, you know, et cetera, welfare, okay, you've got to have an ID card. And unless you show the ID card, you can't use a hospital. You can't enroll your kids in school. And that way, somebody who's overstayed their visa, they try to enroll their kids in school in El Paso. You say, you're 3 years past, we go get them.
Yeah, all you need is one eight-year-old child to die because they're being denied services because they don't have a card that Battagliano wanted them to have. you cruel and insensitive barbarian who don't care about people because they're different than you, and then your argument dies.
All I'm saying, since you guys are...
I agree with you. I'm just saying emotionalism wins the day.
Then you refine it. You refine it and you say, okay, you can use the hospital, we'll cure your kid, but then you will stay here and you'll be deported.
Yeah.
So,
also, you're going to have to, there's a lot of things that we need to fix here. You're going to have to say that if you're deported and you come back again, you're staying and you get arrested again for being here illegally, you're going to a prison for 5 years.
Right.
That's what Bill O'Reilly was suggesting a few years back. Because what we have now is a turnstile.
Right.
That's what you call it, where the people that are deported just laugh and thank the Americans for deporting them and feeding them and giving them a place to stay while they deport them, knowing they're coming back in next week and there's nothing we're going to do about it to stop them.
But if you have the will to solve the problem, you can do it.
Yeah.
Sure can.
Yeah, and so it's a... But as we've said before, the challenge that the president faces nowadays is one of the major is that it's something our country faces, and that is, how do we come to grips with the fact that half of our fellow Americans won't open borders?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you don't factor in. You don't go. In the past, we've gone, well, Democrats and Republicans agree that illegal immigration is a bad thing, and we need to stop it. And so we come together on solutions to a lot of problems that we would have commonly agreed need to be addressed. Well, nowadays you go, half the country goes, we need to stop illegal immigration. The other half of the country goes, no, we need to allow more of it.
Right.
And so I don't know how you exactly.
Yeah, how do you blame the president for not being able to solve that problem?
No, and now you sometimes you do, like with 9/11, you have a defining moment that is a game changer. You know, but so far I haven't seen it. Most Americans aren't even moved by illegal immigrants who commit crimes.
Right.
You know, it's just, I don't know. Where we go with this, if we'll be able to solve it or not. But I do think the president is trying his best.
Yes.
Given he's not a king.
Right.
You know, he can only do so much with the, even with his powerful position.
It's interesting you say, how much can the president do? The former Secretary of State of Kansas, Chris Kobach.
Kobach.
Now, he actually has been named as a possible, what is it, immigration czar. For the president. Anyway, on the weekend, he published some steps the president can take without the approval of Congress. Now, this may sound a little strange, but one of the suggestions he is making is, we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of FEMA trailers, that's what they're called, These are government-produced, paid-for trailers that were used for folks affected by hurricanes, temporary housing. He is suggesting basically setting up refugee camps using these trailers. It would be a fenced-in refugee camp near the border, where moms and dads who cross the border illegally with their children, or whatever the case may be, instead of catch and release, which is a big problem right now. In other words, you let them go, give them a court date somewhere down the road. They would be kept in these refugee camps. There would be judges on site who would go trailer to trailer, case by case. No, you can't stay. No, you can't back up your claims. We're sending you back. One of the other things that he's talking about also is that the president could put in place a basically stopping the money, the remittances, it's called, that many Mexican nationals living in this country, they send billions of dollars back to Mexico every year.
My understanding is it's the second largest source of income
yes.
for Mexico behind tourism.
That's right.
Who can do something about that?
The president can.
What can he do?
He can stop what he can do. Let me read this. What we should be doing, this is quoting Kobach, what we should be doing is threatening to pass a Treasury Department regulation prohibiting illegal aliens from sending home remittances through Western Union and the like. Then tell Mexico we'll finalize that regulation and we'll cut off $20 billion a year in capital unless you give us a third country agreement like we have with Canada.
No, like a third country agreement with Canada. What is that?
I'm not sure what.
Okay, all right. So Chris Kobach's got some ideas and maybe, you know, a potential, you know, czar position.
I don't know why President Trump, if he could do that, why he hasn't done it already. I'm sure he's thought about it. Talking about the remittances.
Yeah.
What you call him?
Right.
I mean, I always thought that was the way he was going to have Mexico pay for the wall. Remember that?
Just tax those money.
Tax those things. But anyway, it's a very, very difficult situation, and it makes it much harder to deal with when, as I say, when the Democratic Party is against stopping illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not going to say it like that. Like I just said, well, some of them will. No, I take that back. People like, what's the guy's name? Bravo? Beto?
You're talking about Beto O'Rourke?
Greco? What's his name?
Beto O'Rourke?
Yes, O'Rourke.
Yeah.
O'Rourke. You know, that guy's got a list a mile long of legislative accomplishments that are unparalleled and really against anybody he's going to run against.
Right.
That and he had his dentist appointment videotaped live for everybody to see.
Yes.
Remember that. But he's against the walls. He's against walls altogether.
He wants to tear down the ones that
tear
exist.
Tear down walls. So I say jokingly that you won't find many, that Democrats are not going to say, yes, we're for more illegal immigration. And then I think about that. And if you're for tearing down walls that exist now, to prevent people here from coming illegally, then you are for more illegal immigration. So
right.
That's not true necessarily anymore. I don't know if there'll be much differentiation. It'll be interesting to see between Democrat candidates on who even wants immigration laws at all.
Well, it's interesting that President Trump, when he was candidate Trump, shot to the front of the pack by saying, build the wall. Remember?
Yep.
It may be, and that was in
among
kind of
Republicans.
Among Republicans, and that was kind of in defiance of the Republican establishment. That's why they all came out against him. It might be interesting if a Democrat shoots to the front of the pack in defiance of the Democratic establishment by taking the most radical position and saying we want to eliminate the border. There should be no border.
But is that radical anymore?
Well, I would think Democrat establishment probably would not want to. If they believe that, they wouldn't want to say it publicly.
Who's the establishment now?
I'm just talking about the Joe Biden, Hillary
Nancy
Clinton.
Pelosi.
Yeah, you know, the...
It's going to be interesting to see because we've talked about, these how far left they're socialists is what they are. These Democrat candidates for president are, all 15 of them. They're going to try to out-left each other.
Right.
And if you have one, if you have five of them saying no borders,
right?
Well, are the other 10 going to go, no, we need borders? Then they're going to go, well, you're xenophobic,
right?
You're a bigot. You don't like brown people.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? They're going to want that tag on them. I don't know. I think they're going to probably go full open borders here.
Yeah.
Before long, I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see that. Right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family.
Oh, just
Radio.
One more. You don't have a country anymore.
Right.
If you don't have borders, you don't have a country.
But they don't care about that. I don't think the Democrats care about that.
Well, they don't. They don't appear to. I mean, I don't think that's a leap. I don't think it's unfair to say if you don't have borders, you don't have a country.
No.
I don't think that's unfair to say. Mm-mm. I don't think. I think they would argue, oh, of course, you'd have a country. You know, we're just allowing people to come to our country to set up and have a better life.
Right.
But obviously, if there is no border that you defend, then there is no real stopping place between Mexico and the United States. It's a blur. The border
but
is
there are different laws.
Right. That's what they would argue.
Depending on which geographic
yeah. They would say, no, you left Mexico and you entered Arizona or you entered Texas. So, yes, obviously we have a border. We're just leaving them open. Whoever wants to come can come.
Right.
And you don't have to have a job.
Right.
So you're going to live off the state.
Look. Ocasio-Cortez doesn't believe it that legal people ought to have a job to make an income. She believes in giving them money.
Even if they're not willing to work.
Just for breathing. Huh? Am I right? That's the new green plan.
That was the way she explained it when asked.
Yeah. And a lot of Democrats believe in
guaranteed annual income.
Yeah, to help people out.
But, you know, just to continue this, the Democrats depend on the support of labor in this country.
Right.
So what's going to happen if you didn't have any borders?
Talking about the unions?
Yeah, the unions.
They're not very strong any longer, though. I don't even know if they're very effective at all.
They spend a lot of money in elections.
Yeah, but they sure do. But imagine what's going to happen with those union jobs if you've got a huge influx of people coming in,
right,
willing to work for $5 an hour versus $60 an hour. I mean, you're going to have chaos.
Or even $15 an hour.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have absolute chaos.
Well, the schools, you'd have chaos in the schools. The problem is, like we're seeing in Venezuela, sometimes you only find out after reality puts a boot on your head.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's
you
what
go,
I meant
wow,
by 9/11.
This is a really bad idea. But now what do we do? We've got 35 million illegals in the country.
Yeah.
How do we get 35 million people out of here?
Yeah.
That becomes a huge problem.
Yeah.
But it's almost, I'm not saying it's too late at that point.
35 million? You think there's that many?
No, I'm saying if once you throw open the borders and say, y'all come.
Yeah.
And you've got now, what are the estimates between 11 and 20? Let's say you double that over the next 5 years. Then it's too late to learn your lesson, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Wow. You know, we really need some wisdom here, and we need the president to be able to implement and enforce our laws.
Right. I've said it before. The problem is you have Democrats who hate Donald Trump more than they love this country.
Yeah.
And they are willing to allow this kind of nonsense we're talking about.
Right.
Because they hate Donald Trump.
It's war. I mean, we've seen it. This isn't new, but it's all out war in this country, politically, at least. You just mentioned the motivation of most Democrats is to politically kill Donald Trump. And if it means that good things have to suffer, the economy or whatever, then so be it.
Right.
But we need to bring him down.
Yep.
That's their attitude. We'll be back with more happy news in just a couple of minutes.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examine.
This movie, Unplanned, is the story of Abby Johnson, who used to work for Planned Parenthood as a clinic director, and then she saw something which totally changed her worldview.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You get the soil ready.
You put the seeds in and then you water it.
How do you plant a garden?
I don't know.
You pray that God will give you a good harvest.
Then you have to work it to get all the weeds away.
And then God brings the plants.
Planting a garden takes planning, hard work, and God's blessing. So does creating a lasting legacy for the people and charities that mean the most to you. The AFA Foundation is here to help you sow the financial seeds God has blessed you with in order for them to blossom for generations to come. We do this by offering free consultation and assistance in the areas of charitable gift annuities, estate planning, will and trust planning, and bequests. To learn more, call 800-326-4543, extension 345, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Felonious foliage causes trouble in the Carolinas. That story next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. The tiny town of Lamar, South Carolina, has been rocked by what was first thought to be a hate crime. Mayor Darnell Byrd McPherson discovered her car was covered in some sort of yellow substance, spray paint perhaps. The local sheriff's department was dispatched, and it did not take them long to figure out the cars were not vandalized. Turns out they were covered with pollen. The mayor was steadfast in her belief that she had been the victim of a hate crime. She said she would not be intimidated and vowed to see the guilty parties brought to justice. But state police say they did not open an investigation because they don't believe a hate crime has occurred, at least not by a human being. Who knows? Maybe the guilty party was a pine tree, a white pine tree, or maybe a wasp. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Here on AFR, this is a live radio show we do Monday through Friday. Hope that you'll join us as we talk about what's happening in the news and try to give you some good news every once in a while, because there are some good things happening, and we're going to continue to try to do that. But obviously, the problems our country is facing, are extremely serious, and there are people who want to see our country changed radically. To borrow from President Barack Obama, fundamentally change our country. That's what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And there are people even to the left of him, if you can believe it, who are now running for president. And they want to go even much further than Barack Obama even had in mind. So we're going to have to watch for that in the next year or two as these far left presidential candidates on the Democratic Party try to out-radical one another. And that's what they're, with these crazy ideas like tear down existing walls,
right,
such that they exist on the southern border. I mean, that's where they are now. Two or three of them have come out in favor of that. So anyway, we'll continue to talk about these topics, but we do have a guest now, don't we, Ed?
Yeah, we do. And this goes to your point, Tim, about having some good news. This is, we're going to, have a guest on here in just a second, but I just read part of his story a couple of weeks ago, and I told Brent Creeley, our producer, let's try to get this guy on because this is a fantastic story about how God works, and God is still working, folks. We need to believe that. Author, speaker, and mentor Ben Malcolmson has been the special assistant to Seattle Seahawks coach Pete Carroll. That's the professional football team in Seattle, and the coach, Pete Carroll, for the last 12-plus years. During his college years at the University of Southern California, USC, Ben was a student newspaper reporter for the Daily Trojan who tried out for the top-ranked football team simply to write a first-person account of the walk-on tryout process, and his life changed forever after that. Ben, welcome to Today's Issues.
So good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, and listen, I want our listeners to know Ben has written a book about his story. It's called, titled, Walk On, From Pee-wee Dropout to the NFL Sidelines, My Unlikely Story of Football Purpose and Following an Amazing God. Ben, tell our listeners a little bit about how you, and it was a brilliant idea, okay, but going and joining a football team, a college football team, when you are a journalist, might not sound like a very smart idea, but tell us what was in your mind as you kind of started this unusual story. You didn't know it was going to be a story until you did it. Tell us a little bit about your thinking.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was the smartest idea ever, but it's definitely changed my life. And I was a journalism student there and wanted to write a story, kind of take a page out of George Plimpton's playbook and kind of get in the weeds and really bring people on the inside. So I went through the tryout. I hadn't played football since fifth grade, so it was going to be a total joke. I mean, here I was, a skinny little newspaper reporter who hadn't played football in 10 years, trying out for the number one college football team in the country. So, I mean, it was going to be a total joke. And the joke was on me because I woke up the next day, I get a phone call saying I made the team. And it never even crossed my mind that I could make the team because it was the best team in the country. And I mean, everything was stacked against me. It just never even crossed my mind. So my life took a turn in that moment. And there I was, a wide receiver on the USC Trojans. It was crazy.
Now, Ben, did the coaching staff for USC know what you were doing? Or did you were just a walk-on amongst a group of walk-ons? How did they know about your plans?
Yeah, well, Coach Pete Carroll, he was the head coach of USC at the time, and I went and asked him ahead of time. I was like, hey, do you mind if I go through this? I don't want to make a mockery of your tryout. And he was like, oh, yeah, sure, that's no problem. I had covered the football team as a student newspaper reporter for a couple of years, so I had developed relationships with a lot of the coaches. And so being out there, they were razzing me pretty hard, teasing me that here's the newspaper guy out here running 40s and agility drills and all that. It was pretty funny.
So how did it I want to ask you about your plan to try to reach out to your teammates with the gospel. But tell us first, how did the season go apart from that in terms of you actually playing football? This is back in 2006, playing for the Trojans. How did that work out in terms of you playing football?
Well, I wouldn't say I had the grandest of aspirations to actually play in a game because here, this team had 54 guys that would go on and play in the NFL. So this team was loaded. It was pretty stacked, and I really had no chance of playing in a game. But I was really happy just practicing and taking part and then running out of the tunnel on game day just with all my teammates. So that was plenty for me. But there was a group of students that started a campaign called Get Ben In, and they really wanted to see me get into a game because I think in a lot of ways I represented just the average student. I wasn't some yoked out, humongous football player. I was just a normal guy. And so there was this huge kind of groundswell grassroots campaign, and they made t-shirts and posters and started chanting in the student section at home games. And we make it to the last game of the year against Notre Dame. We're up 20 points in the fourth quarter, and the coaches put me in. And I played one play, and it was a quarterback kneel, so nothing special happened, but it was a pretty remarkable crowning achievement for all that I'd gone through and just kind of that whole campaign that people had gotten behind. It was really, really cool.
Okay, so this is the complete reverse. In fact, I think the two teams are the complete reverse from the movie Rudy. where you had a walk-on who was not physically in the same realm as the regular players who walked on to Notre Dame, and I think he actually got in the last game of the season against U.S. No, might not have been USC. It might have been a different team. But Rudy, I'm sure you've seen the movie, remember it, he practiced and got pounded on. I'm guessing you got hit by some of these monsters during practice. What was that like?
Oh, man, it was not fun. I definitely got my bell rung a few times. And I had dislocated shoulder and broken finger bones. And I was getting pretty abused out there. I was kind of a tackling dummy in a lot of ways. But somehow I survived, and I'm going to tell about it.
Well, we're talking to Ben Malcolmson, who in the foreword of his book is from Pete Carroll. He has written the book Walk On, From Pee Wee Dropout to the NFL Sidelines, My Unlikely Story of Football Purpose and Following an Amazing God. Ben, tell the story. This is what caught my eye. Someone sent it around. I don't remember exactly who it was. The story about how you wanted to reach out to your teammates and you wanted to give them the gift of a Bible. And tell us how that worked out, including how you found out later that one of those Bibles hit the mark.
Yeah, it's a crazy story, and it's a story that totally points to God. I mean, there's no other reason this could have happened. And it starts with the fact that I'm even on the team. I mean, just the fact that I was placed on that team. I wasn't trying to be on that team. I hadn't worked my whole life to be on that team. So that was such a God moment that I could be on that team. And so from that moment on, I just had a feeling and a deep sense that God had put me there for a reason. There was a purpose in me being there. And I know as I say that you two and hopefully some listeners out there are kind of resonating with that. You kind of feel like you're called to something, that God has a purpose for you, whether it's at your workplace or at home or in your neighborhood or wherever it may be. God has a purpose for you, and you feel it, and you're pressing into it. And I was pressing into it from day one. And I started a Bible study for our team, and no one showed up. I started a prayer group for our team, and no one showed up. I tried to be a really good friend, a really good teammate, but I was seeing no results. I mean, here I am pressing in. God, I thought I had a purpose here, and I'm just seeing zero results. So I was discouraged, as you can imagine. I was pretty defeated. But towards the end of the year, I was reading in the book of Isaiah, chapter 55. It says, if his word goes out, it does not return empty. And so it hit me that I need to put his Bibles out there. And God is always faithful to his promise. And so he's going to be faithful to this promise. And if I put his word out there, if I put literal Bibles out there, they're not going to come back empty. And so I got 100 Bibles. My grandfather works for the Gideons, and he helped me acquire 100 Bibles. And I placed one in every guy's locker, and it had a note that said, the greatest gift you'll ever receive, the gift of Jesus Christ. Merry Christmas. And placed it in right before Christmas that year, and we were playing in the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. So it was about a week before our last game of the season. And I couldn't wait to see how this was not going to come back empty. I couldn't wait to see how God was going to fulfill his purpose in this. And I show up to the locker room the day after Christmas to see kind of the fruition of this purpose. And I see Bibles just shredded, torn up all over the floor. It was just devastating. The trash can was filled with Bibles. And I was more discouraged than I could have ever imagined. It was just so crushing because I had poured my heart and soul into trying to find my purpose. And once again, I failed, and it was just so, so sad and so discouraging. So I go through that week, and we win the Rose Bowl, but I just kind of felt like I'd missed the mark a little bit, like I'd missed my purpose. And a few days after the game, I get news that a former teammate of mine who was on that team had mysteriously died in the middle of the night. So here he was, 21 years old, had tragically died middle of the night. He was one of my closest friends on the team. Just the deepest of grief. I mean, it was just so sad. We go to his funeral a few days later, and on top of his casket, as they carry it down the center aisle, was the Bible that I had placed in his locker, and it had the little note sticking out of it. And I had no idea what it meant at the time, but it just felt like it was God's kind of personal comforting touch for me in that moment. And it was just an incredible moment for me, just to see that God had done something with that Bible. I had no idea what at that time, but fast forward 4 years, I moved to Seattle to work for Coach Carroll with the Seahawks. And I didn't know anyone up in Seattle, but I stumbled across this group called Young Life, which is a high school mentorship program. And they needed some volunteer leaders, so I show up at this informational meeting, and a former teammate of mine shows up at this. I hadn't talked to him in 4 years since our friend's funeral 4 years earlier. That was the last time we'd seen each other or talked to each other. And we start catching up, and he starts telling me that his life had totally turned around in the last few years, and it was because there were Bibles in all of our lockers that one day. And I had just forgotten about those Bibles. I'd forgotten about that experience because it was so much grief and so much discouragement. So he brings this up, and my heart drops. And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. And he starts telling me that he was going out to the practice field that day, thinking he's the last one to leave the locker room. And he pushes the door to go out to the field, and hears a voice in the back corner of the locker room going, what is this? And he turns around, and it's Mario, our kicker, the guy who ended up dying just a few days later, thumbing through the Bible going, what is this? And so Taylor, this friend who I'm reconnecting with years later, he turns around in the locker room that day and says, Mario, have you never seen the Bible before? And Mario's like, no, what am I supposed to do with it? And so for some reason, Taylor sets down his helmet pads there and turns around and sits down next to Mario. And for the next 45 minutes, he takes him through the Bible, shares the gospel with him. Every word that he read are the words of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Savior of the world, the one who died to make you right with God. And they missed half of practice that day. And Taylor said that for the rest of that week, Mario couldn't put the Bible down. He was just enamored. He was just taken up with it and just so amazed at the power of God. And just days before he died, here he is starting a relationship with God in an entirely new way. And Taylor gets the same phone call I did, that Mario, our friend, had passed away tragically, mysteriously in the middle of the night. And Taylor saw in that moment, obviously he's overcome with grief, but he also saw the powerful hand of God, the loving hand of God, that God would do all these things to save Mario, to reach Mario just in those days before he was going to pass away. And I mean, this is our God. This is how great, how mighty, how powerful our God is, that he would arrange all this stuff to reach one person, and really to reach two people through Taylor, and that now to reach me years later, and then hopefully to reach many people here on this radio show, just to be encouraged that God is at work, whether we can see it or not. God is at work in all of our actions, all of our days. He is working, and his word does not return empty, that he will achieve the purposes that he sets out to do.
Well, Ben, I still get chills just hearing you recount this. I got chills when I read this story. And again, I don't remember in what form, whether it was a magazine article or something that I got a couple of weeks ago. And powerful, powerful testimony. I wanted our listeners to be encouraged by it. The name of the book is Walk On, and it is by Ben Malcolmson. Ben, tell our listeners if you have a website or where they can pick up a copy of this book, because this is a story of just unlikely changes of direction in one man's life. It should be an encouragement and will be an encouragement to other people who are wanting to fulfill God's purpose for their lives. You have a website, and where can people get a copy of your book, Walk On?
Yeah, my name is the website, benmalcolmson.com. You can just Google that. And the book is available wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the different booksellers out there. Definitely pick up a copy, and it's written in kind of a way to reach people who aren't familiar with faith too. So hopefully right. You can pick up a copy for a friend who's into sports and hasn't really talked much about God lately, but hopefully you can use that as a way to reach people in your life to really spread the good news.
Well, Ben, thank you for being on the program. I got to say, as a Los Angeles Rams fan, I don't want to wish the Seattle Seahawks good luck, but best to you and your future journeys. I'm sure God's got more for you to accomplish. Thanks for being on Today's Issues with us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. God bless you all.
Bless you. Isn't that a powerful story?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Just amazing what God will do to reach. And like he said, that's the God we serve. And I think it's a good point to kind of insert that into our program, mm-hmm, because sometimes we do lose sight with all the human frailties and failures and all that's going on. Mm-hmm. We forget God is absolutely in charge, and we need mm-hmm. to remember that. So,
wow. Amen, brother.
All right.
What a great story.
Listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, Tim, with Ed and Fred. Next story, Fred.
Well, one of the Democrat candidates for president, Pete Buttigieg, he is the mayor of...
Say it again, Fred.
It's not easy.
Buttigieg.
Mayor of where?
Indiana,
mayor of South Bend,
South Bend.
South Bend,
Indiana,
Louisiana.
Right?
Indiana, yes. Well, he has thrown his hat in the ring with many, many more Democrats. But now he's an open homosexual.
But married.
He has decided to try to discredit evangelicals who support President Trump. And, of course, he questions President Trump's Christian faith. He was interviewed recently. Here's a little bit of that interview, cut three.
The hypocrisy is unbelievable. Here you have somebody who not only acts in a way that is not consistent with anything that I hear in Scripture, we see the diametric opposite of that in this presidency, where he decided to, for example, begin to pretend to be pro-life and govern accordingly, which was good enough to bring many evangelicals over to his side.
Pretend to be pro-life and govern accordingly. Now, you can pretend to be pro-life, but when you take it to the step that you're saying, I'm going to work for laws that stop the killing of the unborn, and you speak out against Planned Parenthood, how can he found a way to find inconsistency in that?
Well, the President Trump has been consistently pro-life.
Yes.
Now, has he his whole career? No, by any means. He's a convert, if you will, to the pro-life cause prior to running for president. Hey, I welcome his consistent pro-life action since he's been the president of the United States.
Amen.
This fella here, he's the mayor of, he's an open homosexual, true?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. According to the Bible, his behavior is sinful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I don't know where he sort of gets off telling evangelicals about their hypocrisy of supporting President Trump when he's living a...
He's married to a man, so you assume he's not a celibate homosexual. Let's say that. He's engaged in sexual immorality.
Right.
So, physician, heal thyself.
Yeah, also, I would say this, too. Listen, if you want to get into every group can blame their opposite for hypocrisy in politics every day. And you know what? A lot of times it's accurate.
Right.
But you know what? There's no other choice for a lot of people. That's why Democrats, for example, ignored President Clinton when he was a misogynist and, had the relationship with Monica Lewinsky, an intern.
Right.
And also had these very legitimate accusations.
Credible accusations.
Credible accusations about him sexually abusing or...
Well, accusations of rape. Right.
Juanita Broderick and other things back that were ignored by the left and by even women's groups. Why? Because they said to themselves, we got to have a guy that champions abortion.
Right.
And so what if he abuses women? The opposite, the alternative is a Republican who's against abortion rights.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you make those calculated choices, and every group does that. And if you don't, in politics I'm talking about now, it's different in other walks of life. You have to be, I mean, Christians, we can't, we can't do that inside the church with church teaching, but in politics... Right. Groups do this all the time. So a Christian, for example, would say, yeah, I supported President Trump when he was candidate Trump, and he was not a perfect man, and he had a lot of flaws, and he was, three times married?
President Trump?
Yeah.
Yes. Then candidate Trump. I think that's right.
So here's what you do. If you're on the other side, you say, see there, you Christian?
Right.
You're going to support a man that was married three times, and you claim you're for marriage. What a joke.
Right.
You see how this works?
Yeah.
And
even some evangelicals were saying that.
Yes.
To others who were supporting
that works. If that's all you're going to say, then is that the end of the argument? Or would you say well, you know, you do have a point. However, there are other points to consider.
Right.
Such as, if I don't vote for President Trump, the man who's been married three times, then I get Hillary Clinton as the president, who basically wants to outlaw Christianity, okay, and stack the Supreme Court with far, far lefties who are going to radically change our country forever. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the guy who's been married three times who wants to save our country.
And wants to save babies, unborn babies.
Wants to save our babies. That's my choices. I only got two, right?
Right.
One of them's going to be the leader, right?
Yes.
So I'm just saying that the left does this, the right does this. We all have to make calculated choices based on a lot of factors rather than just one particular thing in a moment. And whether that's, is that right or wrong? The left's not going to participate in this consistency much. They're not going to care.
No, both
sides.
They only
want to box us in.
Both sides are voting according to the policies of the candidate, not necessarily the candidates themselves. So you're saying.
Although we used to say, our side used to say that character does matter, right?
And it does matter.
It does matter.
It does matter. And if you have somebody who is lived a life that's clean enough to be a pastor, and yet they're running for president, and you think they can win, then I would probably vote for that person.
I did vote for that person in the primary.
That's what a lot of evangelicals did. But then you come down to a situation where you have a choice of two candidates, and now you're voting on policies that will affect the country that my children and grandchildren will live in and grow up in.
And you only have two.
And you only have two realistic choices.
Right.
I know all the people out there going, well, no, we can write in. Okay, you tell me when that's worked.
No, writing in is a wasted vote.
That's a wasted vote. You have two choices. And now for those who said, well, I prefer not to vote then, okay, fine, that's your choice. But don't point the bony finger at me and tell me that my choice is wrong.
When socialists take over America.
When socialists take over.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're pure, though.
Yeah.
You're pure.
You're pure. All while your children and grandchildren are being taught in school,
right,
that they might be a girl if they're a boy.
Right.
And
but you could have prevented that had you voted for a flawed candidate who.
And don't complain to me when you can't homeschool your children anymore either.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing I get. I need to homeschool my kids. Yeah. Well, you homeschool your kids because Christians got involved in politics and got laws changed because
that's
it used to be illegal.
Yes.
And so don't complain when the socialists you put in.
So you have little tolerance for the holier than thou Christian brother, our brothers and sisters who tell us to stay out of politics.
I don't have very much
because
tolerance.
Because they tell
at all.
Us it's dirty and we don't need to compromise ourselves.
You get for me in that discussion, you'll get for me, perhaps we shouldn't talk about this. Let's move on. Let's talk hockey or football
or
the national, you know, the NCAA championship in basketball tonight.
Right.
But if you press it, I'm going to go to the mat on it. And call out your hypocrisy because I don't want to hear any complaints when you can't homeschool your kids anymore.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think most evangelicals, and obviously, I talk to a small group of evangelicals, they voted for Donald Trump because of what he said he would do.
Right.
And I think they will vote for him again, not because they like him any better as a human being this time around, but because he has done his level best to do what he promised to do.
Right.
Pro-Israel.
Right.
He is fighting hard for the unborn, more than any other president in recent history. And yes, he is trying hard to close up our southern border. But unless you've lived under a rock the last several years, he's been stopped by Democrats and some Republicans too.
And he's stood up in defense of religious liberty.
Exactly.
Yeah, but he paid off women he had adultery with.
Yeah, and he should be faithful to his wife, and he should be called by Christians who have a relationship with him to repent of his sins if he has not done that, and he should put his faith and trust in Jesus Christ.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If he has
Amen.
Not done that.
If he hasn't done that.
Right. And, another thing is, when you're electing the president of the country, you're not electing an elder or a pastor.
No.
You're electing a CEO of America.
Right.
And oftentimes you have two choices, and one or the other is going to direct the country for 4 years, 8 years, who knows how long.
Right.
We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.